In a relatively short amount of time regarding the war in Iran, the discussions have already turned to what the U.S. will demand for military actions to come to an end. Donald Trump has said that nothing other than an unconditional surrender by Iran will be acceptable. So that's created a rising concern about this requiring boots on the ground, with, of course, the assumption being that those boots would be American soldiers. My first guest today is here to help us better understand there's another path to take for this part of the battle, which would actually increase the pressure on the Iranian government. He's Chief Intelligence Officer with Artorias, which is a threat intelligence geopolitical risk company. He also hosts Bluff, which is the Artorias podcast. Stefano Rittendale, how are you today, sir?
I am doing well, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for helping us, and I always strive to bring people to look ahead to what's coming up as opposed to just rehash what is happening, and I think that's the contribution you can make here. Artorias.com is the website where you can learn more about the work of Stefano's company. But just as a foundation, because this is what I think is confusing a lot of people, civilian-wise especially, you think you're going to do something, and you set a goal of why you're doing it, the reason why you're doing it, and that seems to be missing from what we've heard so far. It's literally been a daily assortment of we're doing it for this, we're doing it for another reason. Strategically, if you don't have a focused, agreed-upon goal, isn't that putting the mission at risk?
You know, that's a phenomenal question. And how would I would address that is, you know, I would agree that the messaging from not only this administration, but I guess from our political leadership as a whole, I mean, we could just look at Congress. It's kind of all over the place. But what I would tell people is sometimes this is where you kind of need to look at the data to try to get away from the noise. And what the data showed even before this latest round of strikes occurred was that the U.S. military deployment to the region was the largest we've seen since the 2003 invasion of Iraq. And even before the strikes were happening, it was pretty clear that if the president decided to do regime change as his end goal, this were the military assets he would need in place to execute such an operation. And since then, in looking at all the strikes that we're seeing, one of the key tenets and components of this is effectively to lead regime change. I mean, Israel has led a lot of the operations to decapitate the Islamic Republic and their political leadership. We saw that with the killing of the Supreme Leader, Ali Khamenei. We're continuing to see that with additional strikes targeting the political leadership. And I think it's pretty clear that that's the interesting aspect that the United States is doing. And then this additional conversation about utilizing the Kurds, the Iranian Kurds, to do ground offensives clearly indicates that regime change is the goal. Now, how that looks later on, that's the key question. But right now, militarily, and what we're seeing from all the reporting is regime change right now is the primary responsibility of the United States and Israel.
And if it were to succeed, it would certainly go against the vast bulk of history. I'm trying to think back that the closest you could say to an American-led regime change might have been Panama, but I'm stressed to try to think of another one.
You know, I think the Panama is a phenomenal example. The one that's also kind of interesting in a way from a historical context is I think you would actually look at, for example, the Falkland Wars or even Serbia, which was basically how those both of their countries, because of the end of the war, eventually led to regime change. And I think between Panama and that, you can kind of find this middle ground. And I think that's really the design of the United States and Israel. Unlike the 2003 invasion of Iraq, where we had boots on the ground leading this, I think what the United States and Israel are trying to do is basically cause multiple crises, existential crises for the Islamic Republic that prevents them from addressing it. And then they just succumb to it. And then a regime change happens. And it's just different components and different pieces of the puzzle that then enable kind of this crumbling of the Islamic Republic from within. So you've seen, for example, the targeted strikes against the political and military leadership, specifically the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, that have led to thousands of members of those organizations to be killed. Obviously, before even the war started, there was the severe economic crisis where even the Iranian rial, their currency, was worthless. You're seeing now the possibility of the Kurds kind of getting involved and maybe launching some offensives near the borders to try to chip away the legitimacy of the Islamic Republic. And I think the goal is also then, we've seen the administration also highlight two things. One, encouraging defections. We've seen President Trump specifically mention that a lot within the Islamic Republic. And then two, to even see if we could get protesters out in the streets. And I think the goal is, how much existential crisis can we cause right now on Iran that at some point is just too much and the Islamic Republic just is overthrown on itself. And those historical examples, you know, you might find a good middle ground between all of them. I think that's the angle they're trying to pursue with this right now inside of Iran.
Mentioning the resistance, and we certainly have seen, and this isn't the first time, but this is the strongest support that an in-country resistance has received from American, maybe even indirectly Israel. But from reports I hear, it's sort of every person for themselves. There isn't an organ; it's an unorganized resistance. How much is an organized resistance needed for Kurdish ground troops to accomplish anything to move this whole thing forward to a conclusion?
You know, that's an interesting question, because the Iranian Kurds are various groups. I think it's first is very important to highlight that when we're talking about the Iranian Kurdish groups, there are various groups, right? You can look at, for example, the PJAK being one of them, right? The PAK, the Kamala, right? Those are just three. So generally, these are various groups that have a long history of fighting the Islamic Republic already. These groups have been fighting for years and years and years, and they have a history specifically in the mountainous border regions of Iran and Iraq in those Kurdish regions. And they have a long history of targeting the Islamic Republic. So they do have kind of this experience in this guerrilla warfare insurgency, which is what they're accustomed to. Obviously, this is a different ballgame in and of itself. And if we're going to use history, as we said in the past, as an example, what I think this is kind of looking like is what we did in Afghanistan after 9/11, right, in October 2001 with the Northern Alliance, where there was a ground component of the Northern Alliance supported by, you know, the U.S. Air Force, in this case it would be U.S. Air Force and Israeli Air Force, really enabling them to push on the ground with certain elements of U.S. Special Forces supporting them on the ground. So if the goal is, and the question obviously remains, how much of an offensive and how far do they want the Iranian Kurds to push? I don't think it's really feasible for them to go all the way, let's say, to the capital of Tehran. That's a huge ask for them, specifically for a Kurdish minority group. But you could be looking at other regions and other cities in that immediate vicinity, such as Tabriz. And Tabriz is a major Iranian city. That is something that's much more capable. Can you see a scenario where these groups are pushing in to seize Tabriz, more than likely with some elements of U.S. Special Forces providing that support and that link with the Air Force to conduct strikes? And we're already seeing the first indications of Israeli airstrikes in the air, in that specific area of northwest Iran, potentially supporting a future offensive of this magnitude. Some of the strikes that Israel has done are specifically enabling a future offensive on the ground. And what I'm looking for is to see if that kind of continues, because right now it is. So it indicates an offensive might be sooner than most people anticipate or realize.
So there are signs that, and the Kurds have actually formed, it's called the Coalition of Political Forces of Iranian Kurdistan. So the Kurds Correct. Have formed a coalition where, at least at this point, the people in the streets have yet to either have a leader rise or a dominant force rise within their ranks. But from what you're seeing, is it safe to assume that America and or Israel is already coordinating with the Kurds?
I think that's a safe assumption to make. And to be honest, I mean, some of the reporting out of the Kurdistan region is pretty difficult. Obviously, it's very isolated and remote. But it could be even that sort of some of these offensive operations have already started in some areas, right? To your point about the protesters, what I would say is I think we have to be very cognizant of your listeners that last month is when the major protest erupted in Iran. And actually, that was the catalyst for this later round of war. And that's when we really saw the buildup of a military buildup from President Trump, was that the response, the massacre that the Islamic Republic did on Iranian protesters who went out in the streets. And some of the figures, President Trump has said 32,000 protesters were killed in basically a weekend, right? And so I think that also shows that inside of Iran, even prior to this military war, there was significant discontent. And the Islamic Republic is very concerned about it, and they took extreme measures to try to squash it. And so I think that's why before this latest military round started, we already saw some small protesters start to pick up again, anti-regime protests inside of Iran, specifically because Iran is a Shia Islamic country. After the killing, they generally have 40 days of mourning. And so that 40 days of mourning kind of elapsed right before the strikes happened. So we started to see smaller protests start to, you know, begin. Obviously, now we've kind of seen them mostly halt, although there's still some videos out there of Iranian protesters on the street. I think once the United States is really able with Israel to pick off a lot of these targets and the Kurdish element, I think there's going to be an incentivization by the United States and Israel through other means, let's say, information warfare, for example, to try to see if they can get the protesters out. And there is this brewing discontent inside of Iran that has really challenged the Islamic Republic. And I think that's what the Trump administration specifically is really looking for, to see if they can go back out of the street after really significantly degrading Iran's internal regime stability apparatus.
Certainly right now in the present, trying to do any technical communication to form a coordinated resistance is tough because there's no internet, no TV, and very little of any radio going on. So communication to the masses is certainly challenging, to say the least. But for you listening, if you're thinking of warfare as a bunch of lines coming out of a center point, what Stefano was describing is how a bunch of lines going into a center point, a goal, a direction, is what is, and possibly sooner than many people are imagining, could lead to a significant change in how we see Iran being governed. And, of course, the mystery is out there, too. The Kurds obviously want the Iranian government to go away. Do they want sovereignty, or do they want a role in what's to come? That'll be interesting to watch as well. Learn more about Artorias, which is Stefano's company that he is serving as chief intelligence officer, Artorias.com. And check out Bluff, which is the Artorias podcast. Stefano Rittendale, thanks so much for the education, the insight into what's happening out there. It happens fast, but when little knowledge can bring about a great understanding. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.